Join the powerhouse for legal education. Earn your JD, LLM, master's degree, or certificate from a top 100 law school. Residential and online programs available. Now accepting applications at law.unh.edu. Rubin Center Director John Grabe joins me to discuss the separation of powers, partisanship, and the Trump impeachment. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or hosts and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, John, the current political climate has led to many questions over the roles of branches of government and the impact of partisanship and how they operate. How would you say things have strayed so far from what the framers envisioned?
Well, you know, I start with my usual caveat, which is that the framers were not this monolith that were in total agreement about, you know, how this was all to operate. I mean, Alexander Hamilton and James Madison were co-authors of the Federalist Papers and then very quickly became bitter political foes, you know. So it's important to always bear in mind that there was no one uniform golden age where everybody was in agreement and that we need to get back to that age. That said, I think that one thing that would surprise the founders, the framers, and probably cause some dismay is the extent to which partisanship has trumped, pun intended, the loyalty to the branch of government that is sort of a presupposition of separation of powers theory. So, you know, the framers were coming off a period where they became very pessimistic about the political nature of man. They didn't think that you know, they had harbored no illusions about the integrity of politicians and the virtue generally of people. And so they came—
Hence the revolution.
Exactly. And you know, even after the revolution in governance, you know, under the states, there were all sorts of things going haywire. It had been thought under political theory that was sort of ascendant in the 18th century, that if you just reduced the size of republics to a certain extent, that people would know each other and people would tend to be more altruistic. And any notion of that was sort of by the boards, you know, at the time that the Constitution was written. There was all sorts of concern about whether or not people would behave in virtuous ways, you know, within the states. And so part of the argument for the new Constitution is actually we got to make government bigger, because if we make it bigger, we make it harder for any one faction to take control of government. What we should do is structure this so that everybody is all out working on behalf of their governmental department. They called – the branches were called departments at the time. So there was an expectation that members of Congress would have loyalty to the institution of Congress and that members of the executive branch would have loyalty to the executive branch, and same with the judiciary. But what's happened is that partisanship, you know, a type of factionalism that the founders really didn't anticipate, at least in terms of, you know, its force.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they changed parties all the time. I mean, they came up with new ones and—
That's absolutely true. And parties emerged right away.
Right.
But I think that was not something that was fully in anticipated when the Constitution was framed. Mm-hmm. And the loyalty to party was over loyalty to the branch that you work for was not anticipated. So, you know, put into the context of the Trump impeachment,
right,
the second article of impeachment is actually not about Ukraine and, you know, interfering with our election. The second article of impeachment is about the president's wholesale stonewalling of Congress. And, you know, the president has told, you know, issued orders throughout the executive branch. He doesn't want anybody to be handing things over or cooperating with Congress. And so the second article of impeachment is you know, an obstruction of Congress article. You would expect, if in fact it were true that members of Congress were sort of first and foremost loyal to the branch they belonged to, you would expect that there would be sort of a bipartisan group in Congress saying, come on, you know,
listen to us.
You know, listen to us. Yeah,
we have a role here.
We have a role here. The Constitution creates this impeachment mechanism and gives the power to Congress. And so when we are exercising constitutionally assigned responsibilities, you know, you have a responsibility to cooperate with us, Mr. President. Now, sure, we're going to have disagreements, you know, at a more specific level about maybe this document or that witness and whether they can testify. But, you know, basically the article claims this, you know, it's unprecedented, this wholesale refusal to cooperate. Now, it's interesting and I think telling that not one member of the president's political party has expressed you know, let's leave aside even supporting an article of impeachment, but nobody has even expressed any criticism of the president's position. And I think it's pretty clear that if the shoe were on the other foot, if we were talking about a, you know, a Republican-controlled House right now and a Democratic president who had engaged in conduct that the House thought was worthy of investigation, and if there were wholesale stonewalling by a Democratic president, you know that everybody would be in flip position in Congress. And so it's, you know, the point is simply this, that partisanship really can and does undermine constitutional design. It really interferes with how the Constitution is supposed to function. That's not a new phenomenon. I mean, that's been true for, you know, more than a couple hundred years. But we're really experiencing, you know, the problems with that right now.
Before we maybe go back into some historical context, I mean, a question I've seen by people analyzing the impeachment process is, why didn't Congress bring in the judiciary to force the subpoenas to go through for against the administration?
Yeah, I mean, there has, you're right, there has been some criticism of the extent to which, I mean, they have. I mean, there are actually there are some issues that are pending in the judiciary. You know, all of these decisions are political decisions. And, you know, I think that underlying the second article of impeachment, though, is the notion that, sure, we, you know, we expect there to be disagreements when Congress conducts an investigation of the executive branch. We expect there to be claims of privilege and immunity and, you know, needs for confidentiality. And we can negotiate and work those things out. But what's happening here is a claim of immunity that is unprecedented. I mean, you know, recall a few years ago, for example, that during the Benghazi investigations, you know, the Secretary of State, Secretary Clinton, did go and answer questions. You know, the administration didn't take this wholesale position. That's at least the, that's the argument from the other side, is that, sure, you know, we understand that there would be good faith disagreements that wouldn't rise to the level of impeachment, but this is just such an extraordinarily broad and unprecedented position, and it's one that just can't work within our constitutional system.
What other historical instances can you think of where maybe kind of similar partisanship has really taken a hold of our system?
Oh, you know, I mean, actually the first decade of the nation's existence. So, you know, political parties emerged right away. The first two political parties that emerged were the Federalist Party. Alexander Hamilton was a leader of the Federalist Party who wanted to create really strong federal government. And then the Republican Party, which was more of the states' rights party. Thomas Jefferson was sort of the leader of that party. As I said before, Madison and Hamilton cooperated in writing the Federalist Papers, which were op-eds urging New Yorkers to ratify the new Constitution. But as soon as it was ratified, they went in very, very different political directions. Right. But during that first decade, you know, there were two federal statutes enacted, the Alien and Sedition Acts, that are clearly in violation of the First Amendment, but they were used by the Federalists who were in power to actually imprison Republicans who just spoke out in criticism of government policies. People actually went to jail for criticizing the ascendant political party. The election of 1800 swung power to the Republicans. Republicans took over the presidency. Thomas Jefferson took over Congress, and there were then recriminations for the Federalists. So, social scientists do tell us now that by all sorts of metrics, this is though a very, very partisan time, and that the intensity of partisanship is at levels really not seen since the Civil War.
That makes me think of during the Obama administration when they changed the rules of Congress to put the Affordable Care Act through. They changed the rules, and then when Trump came in, instead of the Republicans putting the rules back, they said, okay, we're going to use them now to force some of our regulations.
They call it reconciliation. And they said, you know, that so you could avoid a filibuster through reconciliation. But now, of course, what's happened is not so much in the context of financial legislation, but rather in with respect to judges. The filibuster, you know, the Democrats did away with the filibuster for lower court federal judges, and then you know, the Republicans did away with the filibuster for Supreme Court justices. So, you know, yeah, it's in no way is what we're seeing now, you know, a new phenomenon, but it is pretty extreme.
Now, we've talked about this a little bit separately, but outside of the podcast, but how much of an impact would you say cynicism of how the system operates is having an impact on this?
Well, I mean, I can opine as a citizen. I don't know. I don't really claim special expertise, but I mean, I think it's unfortunate. I think, you know, we're in a period where there is, you know, such access to media that tend to reinforce one's political views. And that, of course, naturally brings along with it this sense that media that come from other perspectives are, you know, fake news, right? To use that term. You know, and when there's this basic distrust of the data that's out there and the basic facts about which we might disagree, that really does tend to breed cynicism. I mean, you know, if we can't even agree on the basic facts, if we can't, you know, to use the impeachment one example again, if we can't agree about what happened based on what, you know, the evidence suggests, you know, with respect to the president and, you know, his interactions with Ukraine, to go to back to that issue, for example, how are we ever going to have a reasonable conversation about how serious it is and whether or not it warrants this extraordinary remedy of removing a president who, you know, stands for re-election in less than a year? We can't, you know, and I do think that there is cynicism. I think there's widespread cynicism. It's just the world has changed, everybody, you know, has access to opinions and to, to facts that if you want the facts to be a certain way, you can go out on the internet and find the facts to be stated in a way that you want. It's a real problem. I mean, it's a real problem.
And you mentioned in your article you've rebooted your Constitutional Connections series with the Conquer Monitor, which I'll link to in the episode description of the podcast, so everyone can check that out. You did mention a bit about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and his take on when they actually get around to hearing the articles of impeachment in the Senate. What sort of impact is his mindset on this going to have?
Well, you know, I mean, I think people who people are going to have different opinions based on which camp they're in. If you think the whole thing is a partisan witch hunt, then you might be more inclined to say that the majority leader is right to put an end to this nonsense, which is sort of the tone that he's taken.
Right.
If one takes the position that there are serious issues here to be explored, you know, one tends to be more troubled by the idea that, you know, as the majority leader has expressed it, he's not a neutral, that he's a partisan, that he's going to be coordinating with the White House, that he doesn't want to call witnesses, that he'd like to secure, you know, the dismissal of these articles as soon as possible. And, you know, there is a superficial inconsistency between what he's saying and the oath that he's going to swear to do impartial justice, because there's a special oath that the Senate, the members of the Senate swear when they sit in trial on an impeachment. You know, it's like everything else. It's you know, what one understands the underlying facts to be. You know, I mean, I usually try to just leave it at that, but I will say that, I mean, impeachment is a constitutionally authorized process, we do expect it to be done according to constitutional norms. It's a constitutional process. It's written into the Constitution. The framers no doubt understood that it could be, you know, used improperly for political purposes, and that's why it's very, very hard to actually get a conviction. No public official, no elected official has ever been impeached and removed from office. The only people who've actually been convicted have been federal judges. And so they made it very, very difficult to do that. You know, I do think it's a little bit troubling to see people so openly say, I'm just going to be loyal to my team. And, you know, it's if you sort of extrapolate out from that what that means, you know, if this all goes away, it's going to be very tempting, I think, for over time. And, you know, let's say this goes away. Let's say the president is reelected. the next election that we have, I wouldn't expect either side to unilaterally disarm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, is the Democratic nominee going to be reaching out to China and say, hey, you know, I'll make a good deal with you on those tariffs if you, you know, put your intelligence agencies, you know, on my opponent here? And you know, that's going to fundamentally reshape the way America does its politics. That doesn't sound like America first to me, you know? And so that's the reason why we do at times have a need to put principle over party. It's not happening a lot right now.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. See you next Thursday. Earn your JD from UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law and join the powerhouse in legal education. Now accepting applications. A top 100 law school ranked 5th for intellectual property law. Apply today at law.unh.edu.